Robert Sickles, and I'm here with Kinda Kiefel for the cold open number 47, the We're All Water People Now edition.
Beautiful.
Well, it's actually the way too long movie part two edition, but it's definitely the Avatar, the Way of Water edition. They really did say something.
They do.
If you remember, at the end
we're
of the movie.
All water people now. You're right. Something like that.
Oh my God. So we need to talk about this
fucking
movie.
Please sing it. God. Sing it to me, Robert. I want to hear.
All right. I'm just going to get right to it. Okay. This movie is dumb. It is a dumb movie. It is dumb from start to finish. And it was dumb last time.
Okay.
But it was newly dumb. It wasn't newly dumb in the sense that it was like the same old white savior story, but like the technology was amazing.
Yes.
And it looked
gorgeous.
Great.
Yes.
But the technology, though still amazing, is no longer new. Right? So it's like the first time I saw Avatar in the movie theater, the only time I saw Avatar in the movie theater.
Yeah.
Like part of it was the spectacle of the technology. Like the 3D looked so good,
worked
so good that I was willing to let slide how dumb the rest of the movie was. And it's kind of interesting because the day after I saw Avatar, I saw Redcliffe, the John Woo movie, which I was fortunate enough to see on a big screen, which was friggin' amazing. Like it was amazing, nice. So much better than Avatar. But I didn't I enjoyed myself seeing the original Avatar, whereas this time, I got really angry, and again, it's so long.
It's so long. Yeah.
It just goes on and on and on. And how do you need that time to develop what is such a stupid, rudimentary, non-complicated story? Why is this movie not 90 minutes long?
That's a great question. It is quite long. Having said that, I didn't feel its length the way it sounds like you did.
Oh, yeah.
Were you just sort of, suffering, wading through it? Or did you feel, in the moment, entertained at least? Or was it just so annoying?
There was not a single moment where I was entertained. I literally thought this movie was dumb. I just thought it was silly. And there were a couple moments where I thought the special effects, which, of course, this is mostly rightfully getting lauded for, were so dumb
that
I laughed out loud. So, for example, the first time we see Edie Falco and she's wearing, that weird, stupid exoskeleton thing.
And, she's in the big robot.
Drinking coffee with it. It was
that was pretty funny.
I literally laughed out loud. I was oh, my God, this is stupid.
It's very silly.
And we can praise the realism as much as we want, and just how amazing the special effects are, but no matter how realistic they are, they're still not real. They're giant blue people. It's dumb.
They're It's another world, right?
Yeah.
It's a built world, right. This is so fun to hear you say that. I cried start to finish. I actually really liked this movie, and I know that I might be lonely in that, but I loved a lot of it, and the immersion in the 3D experience of it was weirdly moving to me. It's been an emotional holiday season just anyways, and so I feel like I've been in the midst of being nostalgic for what's currently happening. I don't know if you've experienced this, where it's like being with your kids or you know, your parents or whatever, and just thinking about that this will be a memory at some point. So I've been a little teary, quite honestly, anyways. And this, with the family and the kids in the middle of that, and kids teaching their parents things, and the spider of it all, and the otherness of, and the in-between a couple of the characters, just really got me. So I'm glad to hear. I understand your point of view. I really do, but I really enjoyed it. So I'm gonna be honest and put that out there.
Sure.
I loved it.
Let's reveal the elephant in the room.
Please.
I'm the odd man out.
Are you?
This is one of the most successful movies in the history of movies.
True.
People love this, or at least are going to see it.
Yes.
And if people didn't love it, more people wouldn't go to see it, right?
True.
So the word of mouth is obviously amazing. And yes. We'll talk about like the dollars and cents here in a bit, but no, I am definitely in the minority, and it's not like I don't like a bunch of stupid movies.
Right,
I definitely do. I just wasn't moved, and I didn't find it new. And as much as there's no question that James Cameron might be the most effective technical craftsman in the history of cinema.
He's an artist.
It's just an amazingly made movie.
Yes.
And it looks fantastic. But I found long sequences, the point of which seemed to be to show off that technology.
True. I don't disagree with that. It was really sort of getting lost in the, in the tech, in the craft of it. I totally agree with that. But it's like luxuriating in, especially, I think, because James Cameron loves himself some water features, right? Like, we've got The Abyss and Titanic and everything else. This felt like a culminating sort of space for him to luxuriate in the effects of it all. And I loved that at certain points, and I'll admit, feel the time passing in other parts of that. And he does maybe get in his own way a little bit in that sense. Tell me about like the story. What did you find most stupid? I want to unpack this a little bit.
Well, I still have a hard time buying that Jake Sully is now a champion of the Na'vi.
Right.
People, yes. Like, I just have that.
That's
and
tough.
Also, like, rather than create a new villain, you're going to just bring back the old villain?
That was a bummer, right? A little bit like, and for him to be, I did kind of enjoy the, in a strange sense, the reverse Moby Dick of it all, where he is so obsessed with seeking revenge on Jake Sully that he's using the military's whale money, right? Whale gold money, whatever you want to call it, to just go after this one person and his family. That felt unbelievable, even in this built universe. And it was a lamer, sort of a lazier device, I feel like, than it could have been. I thought we were getting a new villain myself. I did love the complication of Spider sort of as his son figure. And I did feel like a repeated theme of children sort of improving on what they had been taught and what the past and what their parents had taught them. I thought that was interesting, in particular with Spider and Quidditch, is that his name? The shitty military guy, the colonel, right?
So I think it's Quidditch.
Quidditch, yeah. Thank you.
But. So it's funny that you should say that, though. I did think the whale hunt, they're not whales, but they're like whale-like.
Tolkien's. Yes.
Cool. Like, that was really thrilling. And that actually did hit me, because it's like, they're like killing these beautiful creatures for nothing.
There were philosophers and songwriters, which I thought was cool.
I feel like there maybe was a metaphor there.
Yeah.
Again, intelligence impaired.
Yeah.
But so I was with my 15-year-old son, Dutch, who hated this movie. At the end of it, he said that was the worst movie he had ever seen. And a movie that well made, I have a hard time, similar to our conversation about Babylon, even if I really didn't like it.
Yeah.
I don't think it's this like one of the worst.
Ever.
But I asked Dutch afterwards, how many characters can you name by name?
Right.
And he could name two. And I could name two. And they were Sully and Spider.
Yes.
Those were the only two names that I could remember immediately after seeing it. I don't think that speaks well for a 3-hour movie. And I also think it's an incredible waste. I didn't even know Kate Winslet was in this movie until after the fact.
I know.
And then I found out which character she was, and I barely were just a non-entity.
Yes.
And then Sigourney Weaver was playing like another character that was like a younger version.
Yeah, her genes, her, yeah. her offspring, Kiri, right, is her name. I know what you mean, though, and I know what Dutch means about the name thing. I didn't know the brothers' names until I IMDb'd it, which is, it doesn't speak well to the storytelling necessarily. So I get that. So was it boring to him, or I'm just curious about the 15-year-old perspective.
He thought it was boring. It got to a point, and it's not like Dutch, yeah, he's a 15-year-old boy. The attention span is what it is.
Yeah.
But if Dutch likes something, like he loved Endgame, he didn't have any issues sitting there watching that. He and I have been working through all of John Woo's films.
Yes.
Speaking good. To go back to John Woo.
Yeah.
But we have watched recently, we just got done with Hard Boiled, for example. And it's, I mean, it's nowhere near as long as this, but it's 2 hours, 2 hours and 7 minutes.
Yeah.
But it's just thrilling from start to finish. So it's not the length in and of itself. It seems excessive without reason.
Yeah.
It just, I don't know what justifies this length. And it's the exact opposite of Babylon. When we talked about Babylon, there was this idea, like, there's probably not a good 90-minute movie in there. You couldn't cut to find the movie.
Yeah.
I think there is a really, there might be a really good 2-hour movie in here.
There's fat to be trimmed, and it would be, I agree, it could do with some editing. It did. It was very self-indulgent in that sense, where the battle scenes did not need to last as long as they did. We could have done without probably most of Edie Falco. Her character was completely unnecessary. Like, those scenes were just not at all integral to the plot, right? Like, so you're right. That's a great point. I think that's interesting. So can I ask you, what did you think about, like, the set piece, the change to the way of water, whatever the title is. Did you like the design?
It looked great. It looked great. And like, even at the end, the yellow things, like the yellow fish that formed a path in and out of where they were going. Yeah, I liked it. And it was kind of like, that was one of the instances of pacing. They got there.
Yes.
And they said, like, please take us in. And the king declares, you will take it. Super patriarchal.
Right? Yes, it is.
So even, like, Zoe Saldana's character, who was really important to the first one, she's barely in it, other than to just get angry at the end when bad things happen to her children.
Yes.
As a mother does.
Yes,
right?
Yes. Fierceness. Yes. I kind of loved that part, though. She's kind of blind raging. But you're right. She really just agrees with Jake, and she's kind of absent in a lot of ways. It's more focused on the kids, right?
It is. And this is someone who in the past, with the Linda Hamilton character in the Terminator movies, you know, who's done a lot for women's roles in action films.
Yes.
Just not so much in this one. But getting back to your question, when they reached the water and they say, okay, we'll take you in, like, they immediately started training how to live and breathe and dive and do that. And actually, like, that was a quick transition, and all of a sudden you're underwater and you're doing stuff.
Yeah.
And so I did like that, although I got, like, maybe I would have liked this better if it was about the adults than the kids. There was, like, I couldn't help but feel like a Jar Jar thing, where, like, they're just, like, crazy kids, and they say silly things, and they do silly things, and almost like it was comic relief until it turned serious. But I just did not love that, the focus on the children as central characters in this, which isn't necessarily because they were kids. I just didn't find them particularly interesting.
No, it was kind of slipped into cliche. It becomes like a YA novel a little bit. I did love the idea of being able to be like a refugee that can evolve to, like, I loved the set piece for that reason, that they, that everyone kind of brought their value, but that they were willing to shift and learn to breathe underwater. Something was poetic to me about that, as far as, like, if you are a stranger in a strange land, that you can adapt and evolve and survive together, and the sort of mercy of the sea people was interesting, but I agree. It was a lot of focus. Like, I feel like we almost completely lose the adult story for long swaths of time, which is too bad because I feel like it lost a little bit of momentum and rhythm in that sense, where it just going back to the timing of things, it does spend an inordinate amount of time in certain spaces that are like unnecessary. Although I did love Sigourney Weaver's daughter, Kiri, like that she does have this natural, interesting fascination and connection. Her mother is a scientist, but also as someone that was sort of naturally plugged in to the life that moves through all things or whatever, to the spirit. I really loved her sort of ease with which she was able to transition to this water life, because that felt beautiful to me, because she felt so outcast and othered in so many other ways. And just thinking about being an adopted child and how you would have to adapt to any situation, I just love the poetry of that. I thought it was really beautiful, and I loved her character for that reason, that there was this interesting thing of like just having an ease because she was used to everything changing all the time. That was interesting to me. I liked that.
They don't establish exactly how, but right. She's some sort of water witch, right?
Yeah,
she's
got like
some
that.
Sort
yeah.
of like yes. crazy connection to yes. the water where it's natural.
That's right, exactly, which I do love. Like, that was, I actually think more time could have been spent on that and less on other things, because there is like a crazy open-ended thing where she's, you know, described as having a seizure, right, with when she like plugs into the great everything, but that's a loop that's just never followed up on or closed. And there were a few things like that where it was like, spend all this time over here and then just never finish any of these other stories or these sort of loose ends, which was a little bit annoying.
It
but.
Took a long time to get to where the water
Yes,
is.
True.
It took
Which
a long time.
Was unnecessary too, right?
Like, so, and I don't know how much of, so the story starts with voiceover, right?
Yeah,
and the
that's
voiceover
right.
is basically, okay, it's been, I don't remember how long it's been in the movie. Was it 20 years?
Oh, since the first.
Yeah.
13. It was less than I thought, actually.
Well, no, that was that's in real life.
I'm sorry. Oh, you're right. Yeah, maybe 20. Maybe 20, because you're right.
20, I don't remember.
Yeah, good
but
question.
It basically, like, summarizes, and it's kind of funny, because Dad had not seen the first one. And he said, am I going to be okay to see this? And I was like, yeah. You're going to be fine. And he said, well, what do you need to tell me? And I literally, like, summarized it in probably less than 60 seconds. And he's like, got it. Good to go. And that was, yeah, it was
That's
fine.
Funny.
So there was a lot of background and explaining
yeah.
and reminding and putting us in, like, putting us in where Cameron
yeah.
clearly felt we needed to be in the story, but I don't think the story warranted that much kind of backdrop.
It didn't. Yes. You're right. We could have gotten just right in there. That's very true.
So it's kind of amazing, though, like, there's not a lot of corollaries to this, to have a film that's 13 years old.
Right.
To, like, I'm just shocked that right. there's still the desire. It can't, are people who saw the original going to see this? That in and of itself, like, I just don't know that it would allow it to make the money that it's making. Clearly,
right.
younger people are attracted to it.
Yes,
well,
my kids loved it. Like, they both were super stoked on it. They're like creature lovers too. So I think just the world of just really sold.
So Cairo's 13. How old is Val?
9.
And she loved it as
well. She loved it. Yeah, she even more. Cairo really liked it. Vela was fully on board, and that was interesting to me too. And she loved that there was a kid character, the Took character as the youngest, and just loved the look of it all. So that was.
Did you take your kids to see Puss in Boots?
Yes.
Did
totally.
They love it?
Yes. Oh. Probably more than this.
So, that's
what I'm honest. Yeah.
So we've spent our last two podcasts talking about Babylon and Avatar, but
Puss in Boots wins.
Puss in Boots is way better. For the win. It kicked ass over both films.
It did. It's the superior model here.
It was
weirdly
so creative and yeah. witty and whimsical yes. And, yes. and great visually.
And touching and like yeah, it's got real world oddly for an adorable talking cat, like real life sort of points. Yeah, it's you're right. It all comes back to Puss in Boots. That's
right?
So funny. Yeah. No, it still wins overall.
So this is the yeah. second of what's supposed to be four or five. There was some question. He shot apparently large parts of three and some parts of four, okay. which is to his credit, really smart.
Yes.
Like to do that simultaneously.
Yeah.
And you know, nobody would accuse James Cameron of not being smart. The man's a genius.
He is. He is. And he really cares, like
he
maybe
does.
To a fault sometimes.
He does.
I
just nothing but respect for him as a filmmaker. I just don't think narrative is his strong suit.
Fair enough.
No.
Like character and sort of set pieces are like this. There is something like he sets up the story beautifully, you're right, but there is something sort of lacking as far as if I think about his body of work. I love the stories, but there's a lot to be trimmed, I suppose. There's a lot of luxuriating in the idea, right, without necessarily considering audience or momentum sometimes.
If I were to be charitable,
please, yes.
I'd say that he tells fundamental stories. Like
beautiful.
They're simple stories nice. That are like that resonate with people over time.
Yes.
You could say that they're stories that have been told over and over again,
fair
which
enough.
I don't think is unfair, but it's, you know, people like those stories. There's
yes.
a reason that we keep having these kind of fundamental things.
Yes.
Titanic is not like a great
no.
story.
No,
it's
not. It's simple like, and like
Jack
obvious.
Rose
yes.
loves Jack.
That's right.
Jack tragically dies even though there was room in the
yes.
obvious for him.
That's right. There was, yes, exactly. Well, can I ask you?
Wait, so I just wanted to say though, like, supposedly they'll get made now.
Right.
If these movies will,
yeah.
there was some question it's made a ton of money, it will get
yeah.
made. So we're going to get at least two more of these and maybe three
and
much more quickly.
Okay.
Much more quickly. I think
because of the tech evolution? I mean, what is
well,
it?
Well, because
that, yeah.
three is largely shot and
okay.
four there are parts of. And this
okay.
is, it's not dissimilar to the Lord of the Rings films, which were shot simultaneously.
Okay.
All three of them.
Sure.
It's a little different. More over time, he had to create the technology to do it. But I'm stunned that there's still an audience for this one because, like I said, other like yes, it's underwater, but I don't think it like narratively advances the second one. This is not The Godfather 2.
No, fair enough. You're
or
right.
Toy Story 2, for that matter.
Yes.
So I'll be interested to like, is he just going to keep making $2 billion behemoths? Is that even possible?
Okay.
I have nothing but admiration. Give the person,
yeah.
like, give him respect for what he knows way more about what audiences want than I do, clearly.
Okay. Well, I am actually surprised at the success of, I don't know why, but I assumed this would be some sort of epic failure because of assuming there was, would be a lack of interest, like you were saying, and a sort of generational, like, gap or dissonance with like what would be interesting as far as storytelling and world building now. So I'm sort of pleasantly surprised that it is that it's made its quota, right? It we're over $2 billion now, right? With international, is that true? Is
no,
it, is
we're not.
Right?
We're at 1.7 billion.
Okay,
almost. Let's put that in context.
Okay.
So put it in context.
Yes,
we're $1.7 billion in 3 weeks.
Okay, that's
like,
amazing.
That is unbelievable. As
incredible.
Of,
yeah.
As of today, this morning, it is the seventh highest grossing film in movie history.
Wow.
Like,
okay,
3 weeks in. It had
crazy.
A $250 million production budget, probably more, but rumored. But of that $1.7 billion and counting,
yeah.
70% is international receipts,
okay.
which is like, this is a dream Hollywood production
yes.
contemporarily. And let's be honest, for movies to have an international appeal like this, they must be action driven and they must not be too complicated.
Right.
Right?
They're universal
right.
in that way.
They can't be culturally specific.
That's right. Exactly.
Even though they're the Na'vi, right?
Right.
But the Na'vi share characteristics with every other culture.
Yes.
As it turns out. So that's like, it's like a textbook what Hollywood would dream of in that split in the percentage of box office. But so five films have made $2 billion.
Yeah.
Two of them are James Cameron films with Avatar and Titanic, and then Infinity War, Endgame, and The Force Awakens.
Okay.
This is definitely making $2 billion.
Yeah.
Like, there's no doubt
it's he on his way.
three of the six.
Right.
It's unbelievable to me. It's just unbelievable. And I don't think any of those movies are particularly good.
Yeah. Hey, that's
not true. I think Endgame's great. But I don't a bit of the Cameron films. Like, and again, what I referred to earlier is me being the odd man out. I'm clearly I am wrong. demonstrably wrong about this film.
Oh man, no, that's fascinating though. And I am curious now that you say the these other films in the works. I didn't know that, and where is this going to go, honestly, because of what I feel like you spoke to, which was even using the same villain as the last movie. I really hope he'll take a little bit of a leap, but he didn't seem super willing to take a huge narrative risk, right? He took a set piece jump with the second one, but I would wonder if that third movie would work if it's just more of the same, right? Obviously this has, but I do feel like we could see those certain points where he was trying to be different, or this, but I'm trying to guess what the direction is going to be.
Well, think about the end of this movie, Kenna. We're right back where we started.
Yeah, that's true.
Nothing has changed.
Nothing has changed.
The
you're right.
Still exists.
That's true.
Undoubtedly continue his Ahab-like quest with Sully.
That's true, you're right. Oh, man. Which was, I was hoping he'd be killed off by the end of this movie, quite honestly. I do also, I have to say that, I did feel like that final battle, while there were some super satisfying moments, including the poacher's arm flying into the air, disembodied, with that, poetic justice for taking the fin of our beloved friend, our Tolkien of the sea. I did feel like that went on forever, which was surprising because I think the power of the first Avatar is that I felt like the battle scenes were incredibly exciting, really well done. I felt like you could track the action and it had such a, for me, an edge of your seat feel. But that was where it started to sink for me, oddly, was that final battle scene. And also, I was so happy to see Jermaine Clement, but deeply underused in this movie. But I'm hoping, I don't think this will be true, but maybe with our next installment, it can be something beyond like the military sort of gun worship of it all. Because I do think that James Cameron sort of suffers from this contradiction of being this like nature loving sort of water person, or this wish to be on the Na'vi's side himself, but also has this a little bit of fetishizing weaponry, or like there's something that really also luxuriates in the like sheer firepower of it all, which I find deeply boring. So I hope that evolves to some other version of this. I'll just say that.
In the end, it's just an action film, right?
Exactly. Which we've seen so much.
Right? So one of the things that contemporary action films do, maybe beginning with the end of Fast and the Furious, Five, with the safe where they drag the safe.
Yes,
do you remember
the
that?
Yeah,
like forever.
Oh my gosh.
And then there's a subsequent one where there's a plane that's on a runway for like 20 minutes trying to take off. But like these films, like the ends of these action films, have to be over the top.
Yes,
set pieces that outdo whatever came before, and they are almost always exceedingly long. So this fits right in there. And you know what, Kingdom? Maybe I'm old.
Me too.
It's fair enough, but I'm not a person that dislikes action films at all.
Yeah.
But I just I want more. I want more humanity.
And yes.
Like, even if my humans are blue.
Yes. Yes.
Standard. I just want more. I want something that feels viscerally real and human and touches me in some way that this just didn't. But Puss in Boots did.
But Puss in Boots did. That's so beautiful. No, I hear you. And you're a great writer. You love great writing. There's something that's so lazy seeming, right, about falling back on even battle cliches, because you're right. It's about upping the ante. I feel like even in like the John Wick series, you gotta keep inventing stranger and better ways to have that final battle. And I feel like, I guess James Cameron, it just felt like there was a little bit of resting on laurels with that last, like a sinking boat is an inherently terrifying, claustrophobic situation, but we've seen this all before, more than a lot of even recent finales of battle scenes, where I feel like there has to be some inventiveness there that I'm really hoping to see in the next installment. It might have just been what I was bringing to the movie, but I did enjoy the immersion. The living in that world it's such a stunning space, and the sort of character and creature invention of it all is such a strong point for me, so I'll leave it with that.
I mean, that's the thing. He is wildly inventive technically. He does stuff that looks cool. There's just no way around it. So let me ask you this, like, where is this in Cameron's work? If you had to say, like, what is your favorite James Cameron film, are you gonna say it's The Way of Water because you are a water person?
Oh, right. No, you're right. I mean, it was enjoyable and satisfying for what it was. The Abyss is actually my very favorite movie of his. And I do feel like that was the most unique sort of invention of creature and action, and even at that point set piece, that sort of like unknown Mariana Trench kind of underwater mystery of it all was so exciting, and the way that he played with that mystery was so beautiful. So that's my top. How about you? What's your favorite?
So interestingly, I think my favorite might actually be Aliens.
Ooh,
which is
good,
like,
one.
He
yes.
didn't invent that.
No,
right?
True. It's beautiful.
It is IP that he took and made really great. Like, I know I'm in the minority in the film community of this. I don't love the first Alien.
Okay.
I find it really slow.
It is slow. When I think of what I love, it's actually in Aliens.
Aliens is not slow.
It's not.
It's
fantastic.
Not slow.
Yes.
Adding that S on there makes all the difference.
Yes, great one. Yeah.
No. I also really love, it's kind of his lost film. We don't talk about it, and it's not shown. It's not like widely circulated in the way his other films are, but I really like True Lies.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
That's such a good movie.
Yeah.
And so tight as far as the writing and realization of it all. The characters are fantastic. True Lies, great, great pull. That seems like sort of playing to all his strengths too, right? Without being cliche. He's, beautiful.
It's very humorous though, in a way a lot of his films aren't. Like the idea of a man or a woman at a certain point in their life in a marriage, and like things creep in and thoughts creep in, and you have these situations and you kind of have to navigate and work your way through them. It is really a well done movie, even as it ends with a nuclear explosion.
Oh, you're right. That's true. No, that makes me want to see it again. The casting is genius for that movie too. Thank you for citing that. Beautiful. Yeah. No, he is an, when I think about his body of work, I feel like, there are so many sort of interesting strengths, and he does have this artistry, but I appreciate what you said about the narrative quality. He's not telling new stories. He's telling existing stories in an interesting way sometimes. But yes, maybe some editing can always kind of be considered.
So let's end with this kind of a overhead industrial point of view. When we talked about what the failure of Babylon means for the industry. Yeah. We talked about the idea that maybe directors aren't going to get these huge budgets to make these personal films that don't draw the audiences that justify the expense. And the flip side of this is I would think that a film like Avatar will suck up all the oxygen for IP films, right?
Right.
If they're going to invest money and a lot of money in films, the studios are going to put that money in IP. Yes. Whether it will be successful or not, it has a better chance
right.
to draw the kind of global audiences that they're interested in
yeah.
drawing, right?
Yeah,
those kinds of movies make the most money. And I feel that there's been a lot of talk in recent years about the history or the future of cinema, like in-person cinema going.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't think it's a mystery anymore. I think we're going to have a bifurcated industry. People who are fortunate enough to live in large urban areas may get a chance to see more small artistic-minded films in the big screen. But for most of us, those will be forever relegated to our TVs via
yeah.
streamers. And the movies are going to be primarily big action spectacle. That's where
yeah.
the future of commercial cinema lies.
I sadly agree. I worry about that so much because even the, like, it's interesting to me that, like, I guess obviously artistry is somewhat required for these blockbuster epic pieces that are going to be funded, but I worry about the unique stories and the artistry being completely lost in this particular bifurcation that you're talking about. I worry that it's just going to all be cliche, right? As far as where everything is going. So let's hope not, but it's a weird direction, right? It's a strange time. And yeah, and as we spoke to, I think earlier as well, it's fun to see things on the big screen. It feels necessary, even when it's a sucky movie. There is something so, so exciting and delicious about the movie experience. And so for that to remain diverse is my hope and wish.
See, there's no world where I wouldn't have, I don't regret having seen Avatar. I didn't like it, but it was
sure.
cool. Like,
yeah.
it's
fun
to see
it, right?
I got
right?
3D glasses. Did you
yeah.
see it in 3D?
Yes.
You did?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, of
I, yes.
I got
and it was so pretty. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, just whatever the story, it's stunning.
And I also felt like seeing it was like, in addition, it's kind of part of my job. I need to know what people are seeing, but it's also like, it's, you're part of a cultural moment.
Yes.
Like the whole world's seen this movie. You
yes.
kind of want to just see that. See it. There's not a world where I wouldn't have wanted to see both this movie and Babylon on the big screen.
Same.
I'm super glad that I got to.
Yes.
But there is a world in the future where one of those will not be available.
Right.
On the big screen.
A little heartbreaking,
right?
Honestly, yes.
Will probably not even be made.
Right.
Or to be realistic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
True,
that,
true.
That is a dying, a dying thing.
So it is such a beautiful experience, though. It's I do like that one of our two long movies set refers to the other. That seems rare. I like that Avatar made a little tiny blip in Chazelle's little love letter to cinema reel at the end. But I think you're right. And but there is no replacing this experience, right? Like I so savor sitting in the dark with a bunch of people, hopefully, or even by ourselves in that large theater, but hearing people react to, say, the arm flying off, as we were talking about earlier, or any of those moments or like everyone as a group sort of reeling back in horror. There's nothing like that, and I feel like I savor that more so after COVID and getting to be in a group again at all. Like that group experience, especially immersed in a movie story, is irreplaceable. So yeah, let's hope that can remain whatever it needs to be, right?
Oh, I couldn't agree more. And if it's only the Fast and the Furious movies.
Yes.
Like Mission Impossible sequels that we can see. That's so be it. I'll
take
still
what we can get.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right. No, okay. Appreciate that.
I'm Robert Sickles here with Kenda Kiefel, and this has been the Cold Open number 47, the really long movie edition, part two.